There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It's the highlight of your listening week on the foodie front, we like to think, and it's when I generally wear quite baggy clothes because people bring me nice food to eat. Couldn't be happier with our foodie panel this afternoon. We're joined this afternoon by one of Dubai's most influential chefs, and you've probably eaten his food without even realising it. He's the man behind dishes at the Bull & Roo Group, whose brands include Tom & Serge, Some of Us, Common Grounds and Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. We'll be trying dishes later on in the show. Welcome, Chef Alexi.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to have you on the show. Looking very chilled.
Very relaxed, yeah.
Good.
Very enjoyable environment.
Good. I'm glad. Also really excited to have friend of the show, Colette Shannon, here in the studio. She's communications manager at Spinney's. She's a woman you've probably heard as you browse the aisles, whose dinner parties, I can say from first-hand experience, are absolutely legendary, and whose phone book is bursting with foodie contacts from all over the world, from her native island to New Orleans. Good afternoon.
What an introduction. I love it.
It's all right. I'm free to write your Instagram bio whenever you like. And also Lindsay Battles from Meet My Peas is here. She's a development chef by training, and she works in the UK creating recipes, and here in Dubai founded I Eat My Peas. It's a website and social media platform where you can go to find step-by-step recipes for babies, toddlers, children, and even us grown-ups. I'm a big fan of her simple salmon fish cakes, as are my children. And the banoffee flapjack, Lindsay.
It's a winner. They're there for everyone.
Four ingredients. It's absolutely legendary. Now, I saw a pretty amazing lasagna on your Instagram page yesterday.
Yes. We had it last night. It
did
amazing.
You?
Amazing, yes. And actually, there's a bit that's cold that's sitting in the fridge at home.
Do you know what? What is it about lasagna that's better the day after?
Amazing. It's how it's like a little bit solid.
Yes. I think. Like, would you have it? Would you warm it up or have it cold?
I don't know. I'm kind of torn.
You could do half and half.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I will. I'll do a taste test. I'll tell you later.
So I saw it on your Instagram yesterday because we were talking about big thing in the UK about what I'd give a new mum. So this is mums around the world looking back on the first few days, weeks and months of motherhood and thinking, what would I offer with my experience a new mum? And I think lasagna is probably well up there.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Can you imagine?
My sister-in-law brought us around some quiches. They were high up there as well.
Food?
Just food. Because everything else you just have to kind of do yourself, don't you? And that's kind of the stress of it.
Exactly, just taking the pressure off a little bit.
Yeah, so you need a few other things just thrown in. And lasagna, yes. If you've got a friend with a baby out there, definitely make a lasagna and pop it around.
Pop it on the doorstep.
They will love you forever.
Now, Colette, you came armed with two yellow shopping bags, bursting with spinny things. What's on the shelves at the minute and what are you excited about?
Well, we're getting excited about Ramadan. So literally fresh out of the oven, we have some little tartlets, Ramadan tartlets. There's fig and there's dates and they have a lovely almond paste on the top of them. We have from Lime Tree some amazing little cookies, which are great for children. Of course, dates and chamomile chocolate. And I also brought in these things because I went into Motor City just before I came here.
It's the biggest one, really, isn't it? It's a huge one.
It is.
One.
Square footage, yes, it is. And it's just lovely. I mean, I was going around the store and I'm really lucky because obviously I got a little bit of pull in there. So I rang Taryn.
We all know who you are.
And I said to him, he's the store manager down there, and I asked him to bake up some of the Ramadan tartlets because they're not going to be in store until after the weekend. So I'm just teasing everybody. But as I was walking around the store, I found these really cool little hanging 30 little boxes for Ramadan treats for children, so you can hang them on the wall and open up one every day,
lovely.
Which I think is lovely for really, here really and children growing up in the culture here
and getting that sense of occasion about it all.
Absolutely.
Well, looking forward to trying the tartlets later on. Chef Alexi, you've had a busy week, hey?
Pretty busy, yeah.
I did pop into the new makeover Brunswick before I went to the cinema the other night, actually, and had a little drink, had a little look around. Things look really different
in
there.
It's become remarkable. It's a remarkable change that's happened. A lot of hard work, but it's
I know you can really tell how much work and love has gone into it, because before I was thinking it was a really fun sports bar. I had the smoking area at the back, menu full of lots of burgers, really fantastic burgers.
Very comfort based.
Please
food.
Tell me the sweet potato fries are still on the menu.
Pause there.
Okay, I might have to give you a call ahead and see if we can
get they'll always be in stock though.
Good.
Always be in stock.
So now you go in and the bar area is kind of at the front, so you've still got the sports on the TV and still got that kind of buzzy atmosphere, but it's the back that's really changed. So what's happened in Brunswick now?
The main focus was the back changed into a place where you can have a couple of drinks, but you can eat really, really good food. we decided that we want to create something that we would like to actually sit there, maybe drink something, and then eat really, really good food. And it's come out remarkably well. So
it's more of like a brasserie feel now. It feels quite sophisticated, and it's
got a bit of that Parisian vibe to it. Yeah, I think the terrace outside with all the greenery and the actual fresh air and the natural light, because it used to be closed, that made a huge
difference. That's a really unique thing to be able to offer, because you're in Mall of the Emirates. To be able to offer this little area of fresh space and look up and see the sky is actually really special.
Yeah, it's like a little oasis. You know, if you walk around the mall and you're like, oh, everything is enclosed, you can actually go and sit there and look up,
and
hear some birds.
And sometimes you do need that. And, you know, to going to the cinema here, it's nice to have something that's like an elevated food offering rather than it just being food court.
Yeah,
food.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Also, this is completely off topic. The lighting in there is gorgeous. So if you do go in, I urge you to look up the light fixtures.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't have a big enough handbag, but I was very close to unscrewing one from the ceiling. They are gorgeous.
We're very glad that people see those details. There's been deliberation on those lights, and it was very good that we got them. It fits everything together. It's really nice.
So in terms of the food, what's changed on the food front at Brunswick? So it's now Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace.
Yeah. I mean, the food is, it's still an environment where you can walk in there very casually, come sit down, eat, have a coffee, if you want to have a glass of wine. We just elevated the food in more simplistic ways. I mean, we're cooking really from the heart. It's just really, really good executed food, and the focus is ingredients. That's the most important thing.
Is there a dish on the new menu that you feel kind of encapsulates the new kind of moving forward for Brunswick, where you think, yeah, that's us on a plate?
Yeah, I mean, we've been cooking this dish now for over the past couple of 2 days, and every time we see it, like Tom especially as well, he's like, oh, this dish is sick. This dish is sick. It's a dish of Wagyu pastrami that we do.
Oh, wow. That sounds gorgeous.
So we're basically just curing a big Wagyu brisket, an A5 brisket, for 2 weeks. Then we slow cook it and do a really, really, really strong green peppercorn sauce over the top. And charred cabbage. It's a really, really good dish.
Oh, my mouth.
That sounds delicious.
Really good dish, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, I'll have to come back
and
give it all a try. But yeah, congratulations on the change. I think it is, as I said, it's a fantastic thing to have in a mall. It's a fantastic place to have anywhere in town, but it is quite special. Colette, what are your big kind of foodie discoveries over the last few weeks? What are you enjoying around town?
Well, I went on a holly date last weekend.
What's a holly date?
I thought I discovered the word myself.
I've never heard of it.
When I posted on Instagram, there were a few others. So, holiday with my husband.
Where'd you
go?
So
we just went to the Park Hyatt.
Oh,
which, yeah, absolutely. You feel like it's a different world, 10 minutes down the road, and it was just absolutely heavenly. And what I discovered down there was Brasserie de Paris, I think is the name of it. Or was it the Brasserie?
This,
anyway,
yeah.
I may have got the name wrong. It used to be Trattoria.
I didn't even realise it changed.
Yeah, so they still do a Trattoria brunch.
Great.
You would need to mortgage the house, so we didn't try it.
Okay.
it's like 900 dirhams, I think. But obviously the ingredients and, you know, in terms of the range that was going to be offered there was really at top notch. But we went there on the Thursday night, and we just had really simple. It was just mussels, and we had a baked camembert. So it was really, really simple. Just the two of us relaxed, sitting outside. The weather's still lovely.
It is.
And
dining
I was just
outside.
Like, wow, really, really nice. And didn't cost the earth. And that was the best thing for me. It was that, you know,
the Park Hyatt's great because it's not too, it's still in town, but you look back and you've got that skyline view over the creek.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is.
You just feel like you've completely escaped Dubai.
And the little tiles and, yeah, it is really, I'm going to totally steal the word holidate. Love it. What about you, Lindsay? Any foodie news that you've been enjoying anywhere you've gone?
Well, I went to Koya Brunch at the weekend.
And you're looking at me because I was with you.
With you, Helen. And, I have to say, just, I have been before, but the food is just insane. It's just amazing. And the atmosphere as well. I mean, those skewers.
The skewers. Oh, so it was a chicken, a beef and a portobello mushroom.
And the mushroom just tastes so meaty. And the flavour on it is just incredible. And the truffle ceviche that we asked for.
We did ask for more.
Yes, we did.
Absolutely no shame at all saying we'd like some more of that.
I just think it's a fantastic place to go, and it is pricey, but it's just so enjoyable. And the atmosphere, I described it to a friend actually yesterday, like going to a really, really good wedding. because you've got
better
like
than any wedding I've
yeah,
been.
Yeah, well, a really good because you just have like lovely company. Everyone's in a fantastic mood, and you have
staff
really
fantastic. Yeah. They're on top of everything.
Yeah, just everyone's really happy, and it's just a great big party. Yeah. So I highly recommend that if you're thinking about any brunch.
I also highly recommend going to brunch with a chef who really knows what she's talking
yeah,
about, because you just took care of it and going, I want this, I want this. We'll have more of that, more of this.
Oh, it's not that bossy.
No. It was brilliant. I hadn't been before. You've been a few times before.
Yeah.
It is a really special brunch.
Yes.
And it was packed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, but it's really good. I definitely think it's the best brunch in Dubai for a special. You know, it is pricey, so you can't necessarily go, obviously, every week. But as a special occasion or a really good get-together.
Yeah, it was fab.
It's fantastic.
What about you, Chef Alexia? I know you've been chained to the kitchen over the last few weeks for the new Brunswick launch, but have you managed to make it out into daylight or go anywhere else?
Yeah, there's actually a couple of places I was very excited to go to, Morimoto.
Oh,
I've been waiting for that restaurant to open for since I heard it's coming out here.
Did you go to the opening night, or have you been for a meal?
No,
as well?
I was actually in Japan on the opening night. So
ironic.
Yeah. So when I came back, I was like, "No, I need to go straight away," and it was very, very good. Also, not pricey; doesn't break the bank too much, but it's very, very well executed fish. You know, very thought over, modern Japanese Morimoto food, which I'm very happy about.
What was your pick of the menu, Chef?
I went very sea urchin heavy, so I'm a very big uni, and specifically raw prawns as well, and sushi. So all the sushis are very good. You can see that they're curing the fish properly. There's a lot of seaweed, there's a lot of umami, so it was brilliant.
Oh.
It was brilliant.
I'm glad we've got food coming in this afternoon, because I'm actually really hungry after this discussion.
And I can smell those tarts as well.
Oh, I can't. Yes.
I can smell those
wafts close
over.
To me.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a great foodie panel in the studio. When we come back, we're talking about the latest foodie news. Chef Alexi is going to be treating us to a few dishes, and we're going to give you the chance to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery, Bar and Terrace. Stay with us. I'm Helen Farmer, and this is the Thursday Brunch Show. Basically, lots of foodie news, tastings here live in the studio, and your chance to enjoy dinner out on us. It's always a pleasure to have friend of the show, Colette Shannon, communications manager at Spinney's here. Chef Alexi is here, group head chef, at the Bull & Roo Group, which includes Tom & Serge, The Summerverse, Common Grounds and Brunswick Eatery, Bar and Terrace. He's here with his Brunswick chef's hat on this afternoon, talking about the new Mall of the Emirates makeover. And we're going to be trying some dishes later on in the show. And also joining us is Lindsay Battles, chef and founder of food blog I Eat My Peas. As I said, it would be a bit unfair of us to be talking about all of this delicious food and not treat to you some as well. But we want to give you a 500 dirham voucher to spend at Brunswick Eatery, Bar and Terrace. But you need to work for it. You're going to have to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Colette and Lindsay are keepers of the clues this afternoon. Colette, what's clue number one?
Okay, as I swallow down my tartlet. Okay, today's mystery ingredient dates back to 7000 BC. The Romans called it Jupiter's royal acorn. And in Persia, today's mystery ingredient was reserved for royalty.
Jupiter's royal acorn. It's a bit of a tricky one to kick off the show. So your guess and your name will put you in the draw to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery, Bar and Terrace. Going back to food news, and I'm not just saying this because Colette from Spinney's is in the studio. One of my greatest discoveries over the last couple of weeks has been the Spinney's garlic dough balls.
They are good.
Yes.
You're
going to
make Paul very, very happy. He's our category manager for the dough balls. Not just dough balls. Obviously, he does lots of other things. But he was so super excited about these. They came into the office and he was like, you have to try them. So it's great.
It's like having the Pizza Express ones at home, and they're 13 dirhams. If that's not a happy time.
I'm going to pop there.
Yeah, you should do. 13 dirhams. So that's my kind of top foodie tip of the moment. And for anyone looking for a brunch tomorrow, Sean Connolly, this is at Dubai Opera, is having a Star Wars themed brunch for May the 4th. I dread to think what's on the menu, but I'm sure it's delicious. So Sean Connolly, Star Wars themed brunch is one to look out for. But let's have a bit of this.
The latest food news.
The latest food news. We've got loads of headlines to talk to you guys about. Now, one that really caught my eye, because we've got an international panel this afternoon, is TripAdvisor. They've just released its list of top 10 food cities in the world. And this is based on data they're using an algorithm that looked at bookings, traveler reviews and ratings. Now, TripAdvisor gets 455 million unique visitors every month. So it probably is well placed to comment, don't you think, Lexi? It's like,
yeah, that's it's justifiable grounds.
Exactly. So, Chef, where are you from originally? What's your background?
I am from South Africa originally, yeah.
And how long have you been in Dubai for?
It's going on 7 years now.
Seven years. Have you done much traveling from Dubai using it as a hub on to other cities?
That was definitely a big benefit, traveling from Dubai. I mean, it's so easy to go everywhere else, and it's just about making the time and going. It's very central. There's no really long-haul flights except for the USA and maybe Australia. But yeah,
Australia, New Zealand, a long haul from everywhere.
That's true.
So if I haven't shown you this news story, so out of all the cities in the world, foodie panel, what do you think is going to be the top pick from TripAdvisor? Any predictions on the top foodie city in the world? Colette, I'm going to you first.
I'm going to go someplace in Europe. And I am struggling now.
Go on.
Barcelona.
Okay. Lindsay?
That's a good one. Oh yeah, that was a really good one. That was going to be mine.
It can be yours. It can be yours.
I definitely think it's going to be in Europe somewhere. I'm going to go somewhere different because I feel like I should. I'm going to go very cliche and go for Paris.
Okay. And Chef Lexi, any predictions? Top foodie city in the world?
I'm going to throw a right court here. I'm going to say San Francisco.
Ooh, interesting. Ooh. My guess was going to be Tokyo, which is in the top 10. It's not top. The number one city in the world for food, according to TripAdvisor, is Rome.
Oh, wow.
I know, which does make sense in terms of, obviously, the cuisines on offer there, the kind of poor man's food. Florence took spot number two, so going obviously after the cheeses and the grilled meats and white beans. Paris, number three. Croissants éclairs and obviously beaucoup de fromage. Barcelona. I think Barcelona is probably one of my favourite foodie cities in the world. That was at number four. So famous for, obviously, the small bites and the tapas. New Orleans took the number five spot.
Wow.
New York City in at number six. Venice, so Italy doing very well in this, getting three out of the top 10. Madrid at number eight. Tokyo at number nine. And Bangkok in at number 10.
Do you know what, actually? Wow. I was going to say that my favourite, it wasn't in a city at all, but it was in a little cafe on the side of Lake Garda. I literally think it's the best meal I've ever had, and it was just a huge lump of mozzarella and tomatoes. But they tasted exactly like
how they should.
They should taste. And yeah, so actually my best food experience has definitely been in Italy.
Do you know what, I think about this a lot. We were in Rome on a family holiday, like a kind of the last family holiday that my parents were paying for, basically. And we got lost and we ended up in this little, almost like a kind of office workers cafe on the way to this park. And it was very simple. Food was just laid out on the side. I think you paid like €5 for your lunch, and it was, you know, pick three things. It's best food the whole trip, and it was literally just what people would be grabbing for lunch on their break. Colette, any of those cities?
I'm going to say, funny, I'm not just jumping on the bandwagon, but Italy, and if you ask my husband as well, he'll say exactly the same thing. Not in a city. I was really fortunate in a previous job to travel quite a bit, and I used to go to Cheese in Bra, which is just outside Turin, which is basically a cheese festival. And
oh,
I do love
wow.
cheese. And so the whole city, the municipality, was closed down with just cheese. And there was cheese from all over the world. It's on every second year, so it's on next year. And we, the first year I went on my own and just met up with lots of different cheesemakers from around the world, obviously lots from Ireland as well. And we just had a lunch with about 9 courses, 10 courses, and it was just amazing in a really small country. I can't even call it a restaurant. It was like somebody's front room, the Formica tables. It was just everything that you would actually read in a book. And the second year I went back with Chris, and we were very late booking, so we had to stay outside of the city, and it was literally up in the mountains. And the lady at the house dropped us down to another house who was again open, and I claim there were 20 courses. Chris will argue with me that there weren't that many. But in my head, I remember 20 courses. And again, there was no picking from the menu. You were, food was put in front of you, and that was it. And you could ask for seconds. It was just the most amazing food. But it's just great flavours, simply just there best, in front of you and the best with, ingredients, you know, some seasoning.
And as you say, Lindsay, ingredients that taste how they're intended to taste.
Like I went to a wedding in Italy as well, and they just came, and I was a teenager, so I probably didn't really appreciate all the fantastic food there. But as one of the courses, there was just this huge lump of fresh Parmesan in the middle of the table, just with some fresh nuts, and that was it. And it was just, I can still taste that flavour.
I've got a little a little nugget about Parmesan for you, which we'll come to after the break. But what I'm asking you this afternoon, message in with your favourite foodie city in the world and why. We'd love to know. Mohammed's been online saying, can chefs recommend some of their favourite hidden gems, cheap and cheerful outlets? You are out and about quite a bit, obviously got the kids. Is there anything that you kind of rate on the on a more casual front?
My own front garden.
Yeah,
that's probably where I would go. You know, it's funny. I mean, my children eat almost anything, but because the weather's still pretty okay, we tend to get up and kind of go out early morning. So they're quite ratty by the time it comes to kind of a late breakfast. We tend to go someplace because we'll add in a couple of jobs like the shopping and stuff, so maybe it might be more in Mercato, you know. And there's just kind of places where
just fits into life. Just,
yeah.
What
simple.
About you, Chef
Let me have a think about it.
I will. Chef Lexi, where are your favourite kind of cheap and cheerful places to eat out in Dubai?
There's actually a new place called Cockley in JLT.
Yeah.
That was a very, very good find. Very cheap, very simple steak frites. Don't break the bank, and it's very good. It's a very chilled out environment, you know, very relaxed, proper old school French, and it's very, very comforting.
Lindsay, have you been down any kind of hidden gems?
Again, the girls wake up very early, and we to be honest, we hang out at Thomas Serge a lot.
Oh. So you do, actually.
Yes, we do. It's very easy. They've got the play area as well.
They do, and they've got healthy food for kids.
It's so important to have them for kids. Yeah, at least colouring and pencils each.
We don't share.
Yeah, we do a lot of home dining.
We'll have a think more about some cheap and cheerful places for you, Mohammed. And when we come back, we'll have another clue for our mystery ingredient. Stay with us. Lindsay Battles is here, chef and founder of food blog I Eat My Peas. Colette Shannon joins us from Spinney's. She's keeping us hydrated with some really delicious drinks, actually. And Chef Alexi is here from Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. Colette, what are we drinking?
You're drinking a new range, the Spinney's Foods Sparkling Grape Juice with Raspberries, the one that you're eating, or drinking, should I say, right now. And I also brought an apple one. But yeah, the rosé, I thought it was a kind of a nice start to the weekend.
It's lovely.
The raspberries are really nice in it.
Really, really fragrant. Alexi, you've had a sip.
It's fragrant, it's floral, it's actually very, very nice.
I think it probably would be better served chilled. I just literally picked it up from the store, so
I do not judge. I'm just grateful to be to be fed and watered this afternoon. We've been talking about the best foodie cities in the world. Al's been on saying, I spent 2 weeks in Italy eating out breakfast, lunch and dinner. We ate from high end to street food, and I was universally unimpressed. I thought the food in Italy was not just ordinary, but bad. There were three meals that were inedible. Looking for good food, Turkey is amazing. Istanbul, do you know what? Istanbul is a brilliant foodie city. Oh, we went in kind of the depths of winter, and there was something so lovely about stepping out from cold, snowy streets into these cozy little restaurants where just really good meat and cheese and flatbreads. And yeah, I'm with you, I'll have to say. Istanbul should be in that top 10. Now, we want to treat you to 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick. Now, 500 dirhams, dinner for two, I think, probably, Chef Alexi. So with a good feast.
Very, very good feast.
Good
you'll be,
stuff.
You'll walk out well happy.
Very well happy. So we want to treat you to dinner, or you go for lunch if you want, but you're going to have to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Lindsay Battles, what is clue number two?
Today's mystery ingredient literally means foreign nut, and the late Latin name for it is Nux Gallica. Literally meaning ghoulish nut.
We've had lots of guesses in on this. If you want to add yours to the draw, your guess and your name, and we'll put you into the draw for 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. Now, you mentioned Parmesan earlier in the show, Lindsay. Mm-hmm. There's been a scandal. There's been a Parmesan scandal in London. A woman has shared on Twitter her utter astonishment after being charged an additional £1.50 for having Parmesan cheese grated over her meal. She was dining at Umbra, this is a Venetian-style bar and restaurant in Hackney. So they didn't tell her when they were grating it. She simply got the bill and it said, Parmesan supplement, £1.50. She, of course, got on Twitter, included Jay Rayner onto the tweet because you know he's always really good for a comment. Yeah. And many people chimed in, kind of expressing their shock and horror over this charge. Jay Rayner retweeted it, and then he got some of his 212,000 followers getting in touch saying they'd never experienced such strange supplementary charges. And then got some other suggestions. So one man said, my wife and I once asked for an extra fork so we could share a piece of chocolate cake. We were told there'd be an extra charge. We shared one fork. Any weird and wonderful charges you guys have had over the years? My friend of mine got charged close to 800 dirhams for having truffle shaved onto their pasta at an unnamed restaurant in Dubai. Can you imagine?
That's crazy. Imagine getting crazy. That at the end of your bill.
Oh. Can you well,
that's the price of a meal. It's a more meal. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I think surely it's a bit like when you know, go to the beauty salon, they say, would you like this, would you like that, and don't tell you what that extra charge is going to be so you can make an informed decision.
Yeah, it's completely unreasonable.
Isn't it?
Completely unreasonable.
Parma drama. So that's all kicking off. If you've had any unwelcome additions to your bill, do let us know, 4001. We always welcome the weird and wonderful on the Thursday brunch. Speaking of drama, and I don't mean to blow anyone's minds this afternoon, but Swedish meatballs, not actually Swedish. This is, I mean, shares in IKEA, obviously flatlining. Partying in Istanbul, going crazy this weekend. According to the country's official Twitter feed, the dish formerly known as Swedish meatballs was in fact based on a recipe King Charles VII brought home from Turkey in the early 18th century. I didn't know this, and I'd be very intrigued to hear what you guys have got to say about this. We shocked and horrified, we don't really care.
I'd probably go with, I don't really care.
Now, Colette, though, you've got a Scottish husband. Haggis, not actually Scottish.
No.
No way.
Where is it
I
from?
Know potatoes aren't actually Irish.
Well, potatoes also not. Actually, haggis, Scotland's national dish, was first, in fact, recorded in an English cookbook.
Oh, dear, that's not going to go down with my husband.
No. Croissants, not actually French. They are Viennese.
That I knew, yes.
Yeah. Now, chicken tikka masala, as a Brit, I knew that this was not an authentic Indian dish. But actually, I was thinking it's in English. It's actually created by a Glaswegian restaurateur called Ahmed Ashman Ali. He invented Britain's national curry in the 1970s, which makes it actually more Scottish than haggis.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to go down really well this weekend.
But I think that's what all recipes are, though, isn't it? It's about, I mean, no recipe is necessarily completely pure. And that's the nice thing. You take and you influence. You know, like I have 1,000 cookbooks at home. I don't cook anything exactly from it. I look at them and you get inspired from it. And that's what good food's about, being inspired by other and influenced by other cuisines, really.
So thank you, better than me, though. I got 1,000 cookbooks at home, but I don't cook for them.
Or I've got cookbooks at home and I follow them literally to the letter, because if I don't, I'm terrified that something's going to go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
I've been known to do some dodgy substitutions if I haven't got something in the house, but really, if I've got everything there,
I'm
obedient. Yeah. Some other shockers. China's done well in this. Tea, not the British drink that we all think it is, actually first brewed in China. Also, sauerkraut is Chinese, believe it or not. And China's also laying claim to ketchup. That kind of quintessential...
Oh. Well, it's ketchup manis, isn't it?
Catsup.
That's how it all started.
Pickled fish and sauces.
Yes, exactly.
Pizza, actually Greek. Now, Colette, as our resident Irish representative, you're saying they're not actually potatoes, are not actually from Ireland. Where are they from?
South America or someplace.
They're imported from the Americas in the 16th century by the Spanish. So there you go.
You know, I'm honest. We claim lots of other things. Butter, meat, cheese.
An Arctic roll, not actually from the Arctic. Iceberg
no
lettuce.
Way. Hey. No.
Just keeping on your toes this afternoon. So, yes, do get your more guesses in for that mystery ingredient. We've got loads coming in. This is to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. We've had 2 clues. We've got some more coming up. Do we have any vegans in the studio this afternoon? It's a resounding silence.
No. I tried for like 2 days.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Really, really, really badly. I mean, it's not that I don't know. I got stuck because I was out, and then I decided that I couldn't choose anything that was vegan. There wasn't anything vegan on the menu. So then I stopped, and then because I stopped, I just stopped altogether, which isn't very good,
is
it, really?
Why did you decide to give it a try? What appealed?
I just felt that I'd had a little bit too much meat, and I just felt really like my body needed a bit of a rest, to be honest. And I thought, oh, surely this can be good for me to just... And also, I find it really interesting. I find the whole vegan cuisine really interesting because it makes you think about ingredients in a different way. And as a chef, I find that that kind of allows you to think outside the box. So that's why I like
the challenge.
Vegan. Yeah, and I do try and cook vegan like once a week because I think it does make you think about things in a different way. So I think it's really, really good. But yes, definitely I can only
do
2 days.
Colette, ever been tempted?
No. In a word, I think it's too restrictive. You know, I suppose how I was brought up and in terms of the ingredients that would be quite traditional on our table, obviously wouldn't be allowed in veganism. So I think in terms of flexitarian, vegetarian possibly, but I think vegan for me would be just really difficult. And I think that's really down to having the time to plan because it's not native. It's not.
Yeah, it's not everywhere. Yeah, you do need to seek out, you know, restaurants and dishes.
And you can't have cheese.
That's a massive
problem.
Yeah. What about you, Lexi? Would there be anything that you'd be like, absolute deal breaker, couldn't do it?
Well, I think for like probably like a detox purpose of the body and probably a little bit of a body cleanse. Yeah.
So how long? Like 24 hours?
Well, I'll go out and say maybe a week.
Oh,
I can
wow,
do
that's
it.
Good.
Yeah. It's definitely
with some pre-planning though.
Yes, yeah.
And a lot of shopping.
I did it in a little bit of a not thinking about this.
I find a personal chef.
Yeah.
So if either of you are looking for a week to come to the house, I do it that way.
Dubai is definitely, you're getting more and more vegan chefs in Dubai. More and more vegan eateries.
Yeah. I mean, people are way more conscious now about it, so it's good.
Well, in the UK, they're taking it one step further. Actually, the number of vegans in the UK has surged by 700% in the last 2 years.
It's gone
from a very low base.
From a very low base, with 3.5 million people in Great Britain now thought to be living on a plant-based diet. And the Vegan Society, they have their new campaign is called Catering for Everyone, launching in August, and they're hoping to make vegan food more accessible in places like schools, hospitals, prisons, university, workplaces, basically anywhere that you have to go where you have to eat. And actually, veganism is protected under human rights and equality law in the UK, meaning vegans have the right to suitable animal-free catering in public sector settings. So be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Especially here, I think, where it's such a mix. And obviously, culturally, there's a lot of people from religious backgrounds as well that, you know, veganism is part of that.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where it would be really...
Yeah, no, when I was in India, the vegetarian food is just... phenomenal. Like you just taste things in a whole different way. Like growing up, I just refused to eat cauliflower. I absolutely, because my mum used to only ever make it as cauliflower cheese, and even to this day, like the smell makes me feel physically sick. But when we went to India, the first thing that we had was this cauliflower. This isn't vegan because it was stuffed with spinach and paneer cheese.
Yummy.
And then it was like fried. It was the most phenomenal thing. And it transformed cauliflower for me.
We had that. Do you remember we had that cauliflower popcorn at BB's a few weeks ago?
Yeah,
that was amazing. I'm not a big cauliflower fan, but fry anything enough.
Yeah, if you fry it and you chuck a load of spices on it, then
that's the
whole thing with why veganism is really interesting, because it is looking at vegetables that maybe you wouldn't choose to eat every day, and like adding a few spices, cooking them in a slightly different way, and suddenly they do become really interesting. So no, I think it's really good for food.
In general.
Yeah.
Staying on the topic of veggies, I personally can't stand mushrooms. I know. But mushrooms are being touted as the biggest food trend of the next couple of years. They are basically those kind of umami bombs, aren't they? You get this, and they're actually packed with vitamins and minerals. So they're being touted, and actually we've even seen specialty coffee shops having mushroom lattes, which apparently taste... The word is nature-y. This is in the National Post. But they are better for us than we've ever thought before. Chef Alexi, are you a fan of the shroom?
I love the shrooms. The taste of mushrooms, if they treat it well, is phenomenal. I mean, you cannot beat that sort of earthy taste to me. You know, it's an extraordinary ingredient from nature. I mean, I love it.
What do you do with them? What's your favorite thing?
It depends. For big field mushrooms, it's definitely good over charcoal, slow grilling, like a lot of caramelization. But then when you get to the more exotic mushrooms, like a braise with some garlic and cream, just eat it on toast, maybe a couple of poached eggs.
Yeah. See, you like it now. He's convincing me.
Yeah, exactly.
One of my best friends thinks they look like ears.
Oh, great. That's not helping.
It's just something that she never... So she just refuses to eat them because they look like ears. Which is kind of, you know, it's fair enough.
You're a fan of the shroom.
I love them. Yeah, I love them. They definitely need a bit of caramelization. Yeah. And I think people cook them so they're soggy. That's the problem. The people don't know
watery,
how to cook them.
Yeah.
You've got to cook them until all the moisture comes and you need to add lots of flavour. Well, not too much flavour, actually. I actually really like them with some balsamic cooked and just a little bit of oil. It really brings out the flavour. And some garlic or some soy, depending on what kind of thing you're putting it in. But definitely balsamic and soy, I find, just really brings back, because they're natural umami as well, so they bring out the flavour in the mushrooms.
It's always a pleasure to have Colette Shannon in here, communications manager at Spinneys. She's keeper of the clues this afternoon, and we'll be hearing more about what Spinneys has got in store and on offer at the moment. We've got Chef Alexi, he's the group head chef at the Bull & Roo Group. That includes Tom and Serge, The Sum of Us, Common Grounds, and the newly made over Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. We'll be trying some of those dishes after 1 o'clock. And also joining us is Lindsay Battles, chef and founder of food blog I Eat My Peas. And we want to treat you to 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. But you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Colette Shannon, clue number 3, please.
Okay, globally, 3.5 tons of today's mystery ingredient is produced every year, with China as the world's biggest producer. In China, it is thought that rotating today's mystery ingredient in the palm of your hand stimulates blood circulation, making the older, larger symmetrical varieties collector's items, where they sell for tens of thousands of US dollars.
I didn't know this until today. Tens of thousands of dollars. Can you guess what our mystery ingredient is this afternoon? Put your guess and your name. Chef Alexi was like, all new brand information.
Yes, exactly.
We won't tell the bosses. Don't you worry. Now, you talked earlier about your kind of possibly new favourite Japanese restaurant in Dubai, Chef.
Yeah.
We've got some groundbreaking sushi news. You guys, you're a sushi fan, Lindsay. Been known to visit Zuma a few times.
Just a few, yeah.
Colette?
Yes, absolutely. Took the kids, actually, for sushi a couple of weeks
Did
ago.
Did you? I haven't done that yet.
Loved it.
Did they?
Murray was in his element.
Cool. So your kids are how old now?
7 next in 2 weeks' time and 3.
And what do they have on the sushi front? What do they enjoy?
The rice, if I'm very honest. But you know, they loved using the chopsticks. They tried everything. They tried you know, all the raw salmon, everything. They were happy to try it all.
That's fantastic.
We took Maddie to Yo Sushi in Copenhagen Airport.
Authentic all the way.
Exactly. Like, but actually, she did actually enjoy it. I'd forgotten that she did. I think
it's interesting because it's the kind of the ritual of it all, and the, you know, putting the pieces together
and the little plates and everything.
Yeah,
it actually is quite appealing to children.
It's a good
just
experience.
Not Zuma.
No. Not for them, not for other diners. Don't take your toddler to Zuma. But Chef Nobu has come out saying that we might be eating our sushi wrong.
I'm Nobu Matsuhisa, owner of Nobu Restaurants Group and Hotel. You don't need extra wasabi. Wasabi always inside between the rice and fish. So you can use a chopstick or even the finger also. Doesn't matter. More comfortable way. Okay, here's wasabi and the gingers. Normally, people take the wasabi, dip soy sauce here, right? But for me, means like a more traditional way, piece of the fish, dip. Put the soy sauce and wasabi, middle of the fish, then not much soy sauce. So this is the three way: sashimi, nigiri, and roll. Nigiri sushi. Make half turn, take the chopstick, and put soy sauce, fish side. You can see no rice. Just touch up soy sauce on the top of the fish. Then, but now, gingers, piece of the gingers. After one bite, if you try the next one, some tuna or shrimp or white fish, take one piece of the ginger. Clean the salmon taste, then try the next pieces. So, sushi roll, take this one, and this is no choice, put the soy sauce in the rice, but just a little, then one bite. So everything is one bite, don't bite the two bites. I think it's better eat more the light than little bit the heavy. Means like a more fatty fish at the end. The final sushi may be better raw, even like a more cucumber or more, not like a fish. So cucumber roll, oshinko roll, and sour plums, and you know, this is my way, I like that.
So you turn the sushi upside down, so the fish is dunked, for want of a better word, in the soy sauce. And Chef Alexi, you are nodding along that you don't need extra wasabi.
I completely agree with that analysis. Yeah, I think people sometimes, if you eat a really good piece of raw fish, I mean, you can easily like overdo it by putting too much wasabi
and make everything taste like
wasabi. Yeah, exactly. Then people don't like sushi because they think sushi is associated with the taste of wasabi.
That's interesting.
And that's the thing that I always find. In Japan, I got a real schooling a couple of weeks ago in a sushi place where it's like, you eat it as we serve it, you eat with your hands, sashimi with chopsticks, and it was brilliant.
So what were you eating with your hands? Which dishes with your hands?
Well, all their nigiri sushis and everything wrapped in seaweed is with hands. And they got this very good mentality where nothing goes to waste. So if they do like a raw prawn nigiri, they'll take the tails and the heads, and they'll take them to the kitchen and they'll fry it. And like 5 minutes later, they'll season it with some lime and sudachi, which is a very, very acidic citrus from Japan. And you just eat it and it's like, oh, it's amazing, not wasting anything. It tastes fresh. It tastes brilliant. So it's awesome.
Oh,
it's awesome. You have to
brilliant.
Eat it properly.
And Chef Nobu's saying there that you have a little bit of ginger between different types of fish, which, you know, makes sense in terms of being a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
I'm trying that next time for sure. Now, speaking of food waste there, Chef Alexi, Ramadan is a time of sharing, of giving, and we talk a lot about often the kind of the downfalls of the traditional iftar buffet in terms of food wastage, and actually really thinking about those who are less fortunate than ourselves. And in 2016, an Australian expat, Samaya Said, put a fridge stocked with food and water on her front porch. 2 years later, this sharing Ramadan fridges has absolutely exploded. On Facebook, there's 27,000 members who've joined the movement. And obviously with Ramadan coming around the corner, we wanted to kind of share what's happening with Ramadan fridges this year. We're hoping to have them on the show during Ramadan. But just ahead of time, if you're thinking about getting involved, you need to email them. That's info@ramadansharingfridges.org. And you'll be then sent a list of kind of golden rules and a document explaining how to, I love this, adopt a fridge. And then basically you need to then list information on Google Maps so it's visible, it's accessible for donations, and so workers, labourers, people who need it can then find it easily. They do need to be refilled quite a lot, so don't start a fridge if you can't keep, you know, kind of keep it, or can't kind of rally your troops to keep it up, because they can need up to, you know, 10 or 15 times a day to be refilled with 400 or 500 pieces of fruits, you know, 100 bottles of water. So you're looking to feed maybe about 100 people a day per fridge. But before you even think about setting up a new fridge, do check out their Facebook page and you can see where there are existing fridges. It's better to have not as many fridges that are well stocked than too many that are empty. It's something I'm really hoping to get involved in this year. Have you seen any round your neck of the woods? Do you see any last year around Jumeirah, Colette?
No, and I guess that's probably because a lot of the people that they would be serving probably don't live in that area.
Might be working, depends, there's construction everywhere. Yeah, so.
That's true, actually very true. But I hadn't seen any. I mean, I know from our perspective, because our wastage figures are very low, which I think a lot of people are really surprised about. There was something actually, I think it was at the Guardian yesterday, and it was a UK number where 71% of food wastage happens in the home.
Really?
I mean, it's phenomenal, 71%. Wow. I mean, our wastage figures are low single digit, and we do that because obviously we repurpose some of our food. And we do donate obviously to the UAE Food Bank because we have to. Great. You know, in terms of from a municipality perspective, you know, if we're selling food, then obviously it can only be fit for sale. So therefore, if we take it off sale, then we're technically saying it's no longer fit for purpose. Mm-hmm. So we donate to the food bank. And then we have some other charities for bread and stuff like that, mm-hmm. from animals that we also donate to. But I think the really important thing is, in terms of any of the fridges otherwise, is to, I guess, be mindful of what people eat and what they want, also from a nutritional perspective.
And also from a food safety perspective, yes, as well. It's 100%. Not a case of just putting any old thing in there. Everything, as you say, has to be fit for consumption. Yeah. And yeah, it's giving people what they want.
And that is it. You know, I mean, I think a lot of the time maybe the foods that we might eat may not necessarily be the food that, other people would enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think where you are appreciative of them, and then maybe try and support that.
So do keep in touch on the show this afternoon. When we come back, Chef Alexi is dishing up. Stay with us. Yum. I'm joined this afternoon by Colette Shannon. She's Communications Manager at Spinneys, who's keeping us well fed and watered. Lindsay Battles also joins us from food blog I Eat My Peas. And Chef Alexi from Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace is somewhere kind of rustling up a bit of lunch, ladies. And we're being,
I can't wait.
I know. Very lucky. This is why I love the show, you know. People just really treat us as some fantastic food, but it would be a bit mean for us to eat this food and not treat you to some as well. So I think we've got to have a nice clue coming up for this. Oh, let's guess the ingredient. Now, clue number 4, Lindsay. This is you. This is to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace.
Today's mystery ingredient has a slightly bitter, earthy, fruity and tart flavour with subtle woody undertones.
If you know what our mystery ingredient is this afternoon, get in touch on the text line with your guess and your name. We'll put you in the draw to win dinner or lunch, 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. We've had a couple of messages in. Somebody asking, Colette, you were talking earlier about the UAE Food Bank. Can you explain for people who don't know what the UAE Food Bank is, please?
I sure can. Delighted to do so. It was set up by the Dubai Municipality about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, and we would have been one of the founding members. So basically they collect from our stores in the morning and they bring it to Alco's, where they have a couple of sites where they then split it into different trucks that deliver to 6 different charities in the UAE. So they manage and maintain to ensure that obviously that the food is held and stored carefully, and it's a great initiative. And it gives us an outlet where we didn't have before. So if something got rejected, also from our warehouse, so it's not just from the store. If something gets rejected at the warehouse, we can then split it and send it there.
And what kind of foods go in there? What's the kind of spread?
So fruit and vegetables tend to be something from the warehouse, because in the old days, if we rejected something for quality, maybe things are bruised or damaged or otherwise, we would have to destroy it. To claim back from the supplier.
Okay.
So now we can ask the supplier, can we donate it? And obviously we can then, you know, take out anything that's badly bruised, and then the municipality can then say, yes, we did donate that amount of money. So it means that things don't get destroyed for no real reason.
Fantastic.
Because
that's
we can't sell it, but it, you know, at the same time, we have to claim it from someplace.
And Zoe saying, hi, Helen, please can you suggest that those doing Ramadan fridges think about plastic? So providing paper bags instead of plastic bags for people to take away food food, etc. Yes, Zoe, absolutely right. We're hoping to get the Ramadan Fridges team on during Ramadan, and we'll definitely be carrying on that message. We have got some fantastic suggestions coming in on 4001 and the Dubai Eye Messenger app to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick, this their new eatery, bar and terrace. It's had a bit of a makeover, this spot in Mall of the Emirates. There's a designated kind of bar area, beautiful eatery, and they've actually turned what was a lift shaft into a really beautiful terrace. If you fancy going along there, get in touch and guess the mystery ingredient. Now, it's just us ladies in the studio right now while Chef Alexi whips up our first dish, so we can talk about the menopause. Now, this caught my eye because it made my heart sink a little bit. This is a study of more than 900 women that happened at University of Leeds, and it found that eating more white pasta and rice is linked to getting the menopause earlier. I'm in trouble.
I mean,
I'm surprised I haven't gone through all of it, to be quite honest.
I'm surprised. Yes, but I was saying that I read an article recently as well about the fact that if you ate pasta three times a week, then you lose weight. So, you know, there's
It'd be a win-win situation anyway.
And confusingly, they found that a diet rich in oily fish is linked to later menopause. So what happens if you have pasta with salmon?
Maybe
you just get on time then.
Get it when you're supposed to get it. So they found that the average age of menopause was 51, but certain foods were associated with when the menopause began. So women who ate an additional daily portion of refined white pasta or rice reached the menopause about 1.5 years earlier than the average, while an extra serving of oily fish could delayed it by around 3 years.
I'm sure we could do some math there and work out how we can even it all out.
I think so. I mean, I don't eat rice and pasta every day, but
I'm not
going to
give it up.
And also, so legumes, so peas and beans, reaching the menopause about a year later. I've just smelt something.
That's all right. It's just, wow.
Oh, Chef Alexi, I've just got a really beautiful waft of, sounds like fresh lemon. First of all, parmesan.
The magic mix.
So we have got Chef Alexi here in the studio this afternoon. I can't believe he's just actually just dishing this up right here. I think, is this the lobster mac and cheese, Chef?
Yes.
Oh, we are lucky, lucky girls indeed. I think we need to have a bit of a night out down at Brunswick soon.
I think so. I like the sound of that terrace.
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Well, because I think, you know, back in the UK, you know, you go to the cinema and you go for a beautiful meal before, just get a really good bite and then go and see a film, whereas I feel like options have been a bit limited here. Obviously there's the brilliant kind of dining in options in terms of like the Guy Road and now the Guy Ferreira, which is happening over at Jebel Ali.
It's all quite claustrophobic because, you know, as in you're inside and you've already been in the cinema or you're going in the cinema, so it's nice to have two dates.
So I would really like to do this. I went to see Tully the other night and popped into Brunswick before, so Tully's coming out today, I think. This is a new film with Charlize Theron where she gained...
The previews look amazing. So funny. I've laughed out
funny.
Several times.
It's the same writer and director who did Juno and Young Adult.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I love Juno. The soundtrack's brilliant.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron, as I said, gained 50 pounds to the role, and she said it really depressed her and how long it took her, about a year and a half to lose the weight. My reaction was, yeah. It does, Charlize. It does. So if you're looking for a good film this weekend, I really would recommend it. It's about a mum. She's got two kids already. She's got an 8-year-old daughter and a son of about 5 who has autism and is struggling at school. School's not being very accepting of him. Heavily pregnant, she gives birth. And she got a very wealthy brother who says, my gift to you for this baby is going to be a night nanny. And they resist the idea and, you know, say, don't want a stranger in the house. But of course, 3 kids, husband travels a lot for work, and she inevitably really struggles. And she reaches out and gets in touch with this night nanny who's called Tully. And within a night, okay, maybe 2 nights, her life is transformed and her world starts to kind of come together again. And she starts to have sleep. And there's a great quote where after a great night's sleep, she says to her husband, it's like I can see colours again. Like, yes, that's exactly how it feels when you're really sleep deprived.
So you're looking for a night nanny now?
I'm thinking about it. But there's a good twist. their relationship kind of becomes quite entangled, and there's a really good twist at the end. So if you're looking for a film this weekend, Tully is out. I know the Ticket guys are talking about the best films this weekend. I Feel Pretty is out. There's a great new film on Netflix with Adam Sandler. So good weekend for the cinema. Mm. But I am quite tempted to try that Guy Ferrari in cinema dining experience, the guy's Big Bites. Mm. There's going to be nothing low-calorie on the menu at all.
No, definitely not on anything I've seen him cook.
No, he's not known for being restrictive on the calories.
Yeah, we went to A Quiet Place.
What's that like?
Terrifying.
Oh, no,
I don't particularly like horror movies, but I saw a clip of it and I thought, wow, I'd really like to.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it?
But not one possibly for the cinema here. It was a little bit noisy because I don't think they talk for the first 45 minutes. In
the concept of the film is they're not allowed to speak, otherwise they'll be attacked by, what is it?
Alien kind of
beasties.
Thing. Yeah, rather large ones. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Guess
I'm not sure I'd survive very well.
Oh, I would.
Gone the first 10 seconds.
100% gone first.
I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything.
I'd be like the sacrificial one.
Stick Lindsay out.
Yeah.
Chef Alexi is nearly ready to serve. When we come back, we're going to have another mystery ingredient clue. We'll be tucking into some dishes from Brunswick Eatery, Bar and Terrace. Stay with us.
Dubai Today.
Get in touch with
Chef Alexi has just served up a fantastic plate full of food to me, Helen Farmer, and some very lucky guests in the studio. Lindsay Battles is here. She's chef and founder of food blog I Eat My Peas. And Colette Shannon joins us from Spinney's as well. She's popped the cork on some fizzy mocktails that are currently on the shelves. We've had a raspberry and grape, and we're having a lovely sparkling apple as well. As I said, it's an absolute joyous way to spend an afternoon. But we would like to treat you to a bit of food as well. If you would like to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery, Bar and Terrace, you need to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Colette Shannon, keeper of the clues. Clue number 5, please.
Okay, today's mystery ingredient is the only tree nut that has an excellent source of ALA, the plant-based omega-3 essential fatty acid. A diet with plenty of today's mystery ingredient stimulates weight loss, I need this, maintains healthy cholesterol levels, and also contains protein and fibre.
Your guess and your name to win 500 dirhams to spend at, at Chef Alexi's own joint right here in Dubai, Mall of the Emirates, Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace, which has just had a bit of a makeover, a bit of a facelift, and gone from sports bar to more brasserie. Is that fair to say?
That's a fair judgment.
And some of the best light fixtures I've seen in Dubai in a long time. I'm determined to find out where they're from. Now, Chef, you've been kind of busying away in our studio kitchen to serve up. Well, I've got a salad in front of me. This is a burnt orange. Can you tell us what it's called and what's in it?
So it's a burnt orange salad. These will be one of our bar snacks. It'll be like a small petite salad. We're trying to play on the taste of bitter, sweet and sour. So by burning the oranges, you actually remove all the bitterness out of the skin. So we just put them whole over charcoal, char them till they're completely black. Then we add some crystallized walnuts to them. And the walnuts
are insane.
The walnuts, it's a very cool technique. We're blanching them in water 3 times and then shocking them in ice water. Then you actually coat them in confectioner's sugar.
Really?
And then you deep fry them in walnut oil.
Well, that's why I like it, because it's sugar and fried. Yeah. Okay, great.
So it's walnut oil, sugar, fried in walnut oil, and it's just a really good texture. And it tastes like it's toasted from the inside out instead
it's all
of just
the way
the
through.
Outside toasted.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So, but the burned orange is really interesting because, as you say, it's the whole orange. So you've got this charred skin, and then once it's sliced into, it's got that really beautiful, vibrant flesh like you'd expect.
Yeah.
And you can eat the whole thing.
Yeah. The important thing is that I'm trying to make people realize that there's a difference between burnt and charred. There's a big difference behind that. And if you manage to get the middle sweet spot just right, it's easy to eat and it's very, very good. You have to play with bitterness as a flavor profile in today's cooking, because by drinking so much coffee every day, a lot of cheese is even good parmesan, it's got bitter notes inside of it. It's a natural element, you know, it's a natural taste. So we're trying to play a bit on that.
And do you think our palates have changed a little bit because of things that are, you know, in common cuisines now?
Very much so, very much so. I think the more people are extremely educated now in food, you pick it up. As soon as somebody mentions it, then you think, oh, every time I drink a good flat white or eat something that's a bit charred, you're like, oh, this is not burnt. It's actually charred and it tastes good. So the bitter is a flavor profile.
So Chef Alexa, you grew up in South Africa. Who was the kind of the main cook in your family? Who was doing the cooking?
Well, my dad over the weekends, over the barbecue. My mom every weekday night. Yeah, she was a good cook. She was a very, very good cook.
What's your kind of earliest foodie memory?
I loved roast chicken. Just
a real family.
Yeah, a proper roast chicken. I mean, it's very sentimental to me. So whenever we even put roast chicken on our menus, like Brunswick's got a whole poulet breast like roasted on the menu, and I'm very, very sensitive over
it. Yeah, takes a while to perfect.
Yeah,
don't put it on there lightly.
The temperature has to be good. You know, the skin has to be nice and caramelized. You know, there needs to be a lot of thyme, a lot of garlic on the inside, lemon. You know.
What does it come with? What's it served with at Brunswick?
We're serving it with a black garlic sauce.
Oh, wow.
And oyster mushrooms.
Back to the mushrooms.
Yes, umami. All of it's umami.
And chicken and garlic. Oh,
yes, exactly.
Always.
Oh, that is a happy time. What was the first thing you remember kind of cooking and going, do you know what? I really love food. I think I could do this.
That's a good question. I think I baked a loaf of bread. I made a loaf of bread, but just like utility bread, you know, like what you would do in a loaf tin sort of stuff. And that really caught my eye. And then I really started actually looking into sourdough and like natural leavened bread. And then it really just went off from there.
I think it's the magical transformation.
Yeah,
of,
it is.
And I think like whenever I talk about kids getting into food, it's about things like making bread. Like how do those ingredients go together? Yeah. And you don't really have to do very much at all.
Yeah,
a little bit of care, some good ingredients, and you get the most amazing loaf of bread. And I think it's those kind of things that often make someone just think, yes, this is where I want to go.
And it's pretty easy as well.
It's not
like it's really hard to make a good loaf of bread. Anybody can make it, you know. But as soon as you make it, you think, why have I ever not made bread before? Once you do it,
Lindsay, can you share your two ingredient bread? Because I saw it this.
Yeah, well, it's just it's flat bread, so it's not a loaf of bread. So it's full fat yogurt and flour. And basically, you mix it into a dough, either by your hands or with a dough hook, and then you can either roll it out or push it out with your hands, and then you just cook it in a hot pan, and it's amazing. And
that's a great thing for kids, and it's really good. bad cooks like me.
And so, like the other night, I made a lamb curry at home, and I didn't have any bread, but I wanted something with it. Yeah. So I just I made that bread quickly, and then I brushed it with. So I had some melted oil that I put a bit of crushed garlic in, and then I just brushed the bread as it was cooking on the hot plate, and just turned it around. So we had kind of a garlic naan, but one that we knew what was in it, and was great cold the next day again, like the lasagna.
See, there are some things that are just better the next day. When we come back, we're going to be tasting dish number two on our plate, which is, Chef Alexi,
the lobster mac and cheese.
Lobster mac and cheese. And also, you're going to have your final mystery ingredient to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. We'll be back with you after this. Chef Alexi is here. He's the group head chef at the Bull and Roo Group, which includes Tom and Serge, The Sum of Us, Common Grounds, and Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. He's here with his Brunswick chef's hat on, not literally, to talk about the Mall of the Emirates spot getting a bit of a makeover, and we're trying some of his dishes live on air. Lindsay Bettles is here, development chef and founder of food blog I Eat My Peas, where you can find that amazing two-ingredient recipe for flatbread, which I'm definitely going to be trying this weekend. And we're also joined by Colette Shannon, friend of the show, communications manager at Spinney's, who's brought in some nibbles and some drinks. We're basically being spoiled rotten here. But you know what? We want to spoil you too. We want to treat you to 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. You just need to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Right. It's the final clue, Lindsay Battles. What is it?
So today's mystery ingredient can be added to salads, particularly Wardoff salad, with apple, celery and raisins. It's added to muesli, used for baking cakes, biscuits or pies, and of course eaten as a healthy snack. It can also be found in Chef Alexi's burnt orange salad on the menu at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace.
So if you were listening carefully when we tasted that burnt orange salad, I was like, we might have just said it. We definitely said what the mystery ingredient was. So hopefully you were listening and you can tell us your guess, and your name will put you into the draw to win 500 dirhams to spend at Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. Chef Alexi, this lobster mac and cheese, good grief. a bit good.
Thank you very much.
How many times have you eaten it over the last few weeks before it went on the menu?
Too many times. Too many times.
Which is why I'm eating your portion this afternoon.
Just to get the sauce, that was the hard one. I mean,
really?
This is a no waste, no flour, no drama sauce pretty much. It's just flavor from lobster shells, the lobster meat, and really, really good aged cheese, because we've gone down the lines of putting in a humidified room in Brunswick, so we're storing a lot of four-year-old Parmesan, like the real deal.
Brilliant.
Stuff. Comté.
I wish you could see Colette's face.
Can we get invites?
Can we live in the cheese room?
Yes. Yes. And I mean, it's pretty much stock now, so it's been for like 4 or 5 days fully running, and when you walk in there now, you just smell like cheese,
wow,
like maturing. I love that smell. So we decided we're just gonna base the dishes on what we stock in there. So this is it's a lobster sauce with a little bit of saffron, not too overpowering. You know, people, I don't think people would actually pick it up, the saffron inside.
No, I didn't actually at all.
A lot of tarragon, and then just Comté, Parmesan, Fontina cheese. Very, very good stuff.
Do you know what really surprised me about it is it sounds like such a rich dish, and it's creamy and it's smooth and it's welcoming, but it's not stodgy and heavy.
Yeah.
It's actually really bright, really vibrant flavors. You taste that lemon through you, yeah, and it's the lobster sauce I think really transforms it. It's not like a mac and cheese where you've just put some bits of lobster in it. The
yeah,
whole thing tastes, it's really an elevated version. Colette, what's your take on this?
Well, I think if you could see my plate, you probably know what.
Completely licked clean.
It was absolutely, yeah, if I was at home, I would definitely lick it. But it's, yeah, as you say, it's quite light for yeah, mac and cheese.
It's really light, yeah.
And I'm just kind of thinking from all of this, the fact that it has passed in it, it's clearly weight loss kind of dish.
Just two more.
And
this week.
And I yeah, think there was a mystery ingredient there that also stimulates weight loss.
It's basically a calorie free lunch this afternoon, ladies. You're very welcome.
Leave the studio looking amazing.
Svelte. But as you say, it's really light. It's
yeah,
not it's unlike any of the mac and cheese I've had before, actually, because I think of mac and cheese being this, you know, spoon it on, slop it on a plate, and it's not.
It's a grown-up's mac and cheese.
It's a grown-up
as well.
Mac and cheese, exactly. So how much? So which cheeses are in there? Just remind us.
So we got Comté, and that's been aged for like 4 years. Then we were very lucky to get a six-year-old wheel of Parmigiano Reggiano.
Wow.
So yeah, a whole wheel. So if you come down tonight, you'll get like the, because we cracked the Parmesan, so you'll get it with some 50-year-old balsamic free.
Oh,
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, so it's just basically
date night frizzle.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's book a babysitter.
And then the cheese that gives it like that luxurious creamy feel is the Fontina, and that's a really good one. Proper French Fontina. There's no mozzarella or anything else inside there. And just Parmesan on top.
It's delicious. It really is. It's a triumph of a mac and cheese. Now, it's interesting, Chef, you're not eating with us today.
Yeah.
Because you basically spend all day every day eating.
Trying things, yeah.
So, yeah, you are trying things. So is it a nibble here, a spoonful there, and then
yeah,
you're kind of eating your calories without even realising it, I guess.
Yeah.
What happens when you get home at the end of the day? What do you eat?
It's
a slice of toast.
Actually. I love sometimes comforting things when I get home. So if I have some good bread at home, I would eat bread with good butter. Like, I really like good butter, and that's like a late night thing. Maybe a bit of jam with some cheese, like a really good sharp cheddar. I like that. It's a weird combination, but
that burnt orange would probably go really well, because
yeah,
that was like marmalade. Was
yeah,
just
seriously, that does, it's always interesting to hear what like a chef's life actually is like on the food front, because it's like a comedian. Everyone expects a comedian to be funny. All the time. But when they're not on stage, it can be a very different story. And with chefs, as you were saying, Lindsay,
yeah, you eat a lot of rich stuff all the time, like constantly. So actually at home, you kind of really do crave those very simple but perfect flavours.
Yeah.
It's also, as I said, like, it's normally quite late that you get home if you've been working in the kitchen. So, you know, you don't really want to go, you don't really want to eat another dinner. And so you just have something light and just like chill out for a little bit after kind of the pressure of being in the kitchen.
Yeah.
What do you have for your kind of staff meals at Brunswick? What are you feeding the troops?
Well, we very much believe in serving people the products that we use. So that's very high up there. So if we're using a good roast chicken, we use the same chicken. You know, whether it's in a curry, whether it's lamb chops grilled, whether it's good just sausages and mashed with some gravy, it has to be food that people will eat and they feel nourished and happy.
Otherwise, and happy to be there, because it passes on to the diners.
The chef's grub is often like the best things, because they're just created like last minute as well, and they're kind of thrown together with what, and it's great.
I remember like probably like 5-6 years ago, like the staff meals used to be like very much just a chicken leg, a bit of pasta, that was it. Now it's completely evolved, because I think people have seen in kitchens and in restaurants, if you feed the staff well, everybody is much more productive.
People get excited as well, because they're part of it, aren't they?
Yeah,
and
they love it.
And also you can experiment with some of the ingredients, and you never know where that's going to lead. So it's good to let your chefs experiment and kind of move in different directions.
As you say, it's a communal thing, isn't it? It's the staff coming together, talking about what's on the menu, and in terms of, as you say, trying some of the different ingredients as well. It's an education for them, so they can then educate the people that are coming in to pay for and eat that food. So so Brunswick, it's had this makeover and now opens the public with its new eatery.
Yeah, now the real hard work starts.
Coming on the radio is a little mini holiday for you.
Yeah, it's nice to sit down. Now the consistency and delivering happens,
So what can people expect when they walk through the door? Because there's actually two doors now. There's a door to the bar and the door to the eatery. So what can people expect when they walk through?
The one thing that they can expect is they will definitely notice the change, but we don't want people to change the comfort of how they walk in there. You can still come in there with shorts. You can still come in there with flip-flops. You know, there's nothing pretentious about it. If you want to sit there and chill out for 3-4 hours and work on a laptop, you can do that. You know, you can eat a light lunch, you can graze. At nighttime, you can have heaps of bar snacks, even the new sourdough pizzas.
Ooh,
you can
yummy.
You can sit outside. It's just a very, very casual environment, but we've just amped up the food that we pretty much want to eat in food. You know, it's like a grown-up version of a sports bar. That's what it is.
Is this selfish? You've basically created a place that you would want to go to.
There was actually a big discussion. It's like, we need a place where you can sit for extended periods and constantly eat good food, you know. So we've gone very diverse. You know, we've gone extensive bar snacks, like plates, sharing plates, you know. So it's a very, very casual environment, you know, and it's a beautiful area to sit in.
It is beautiful.
It's changed dramatically, I have to say that. So
the mac and cheese is on the menu.
Yeah.
The burnt orange salad is on the menu, and we've got another dish in front of us. What is this, chef?
So that was an...
I say was because we've already
seen it. He's looking at my plate.
I'm gone.
And mine.
Looking for the plate. That was it's a eggplant baked in salt. So basically we're taking a whole eggplant, roasting it over charcoal, then baking it in a salt crust for probably like 40-50 minutes. Then it's just dressed once again with a lot of citrus, cold pressed avocado oil, some barley, feta. And then we went a bit Arabic with some za'atar, sumac, parsley, coriander, and tomatoes. And this is very simple. It should be very citrus and acidic, but also with the bitter, smoky undertones of roasted aubergines.
Do you know what I really liked about it is that when it comes to vegetarian dining, it can be such a afterthought.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a risotto, or it's one thing on the menu that is literally token for vegetarians. This, as a meat eater, I would be delighted to order and eat. It's a star veggie dish, really, is what I'm saying.
Exactly, yeah.
I think with the whole sharing plate concept as well, and it has been around for quite a while now, but that also helps with the vegetarian side of things, because you often need quite a few bits of vegetables to make it exciting.
Yeah,
and so like having that burnt orange salad and the aubergine, like they're fantastic.
Yeah,
really delicious.
No, I agree with that. I mean, vegetarian doesn't have to be boring.
Of course.
That's one thing I've realized. You can get as much flavor from meat as what you can from vegetables. So we really focused on that as well, to make sure everybody's looked after. You know, the tastes are there, the execution is there. So
and
I'm
also
happy about it.
As you said, like lots of people are far more educated about food now. You know, when you said the za'atar, like lots of people know what za'atar is now.
Yeah.
Whereas,
and not just because we're living here.
Enough. Even back in the UK, I know it's definitely like it's starting just to be stocked on the supermarkets and people know what these things are. So because people are educated, you kind of do have to make food a little bit more exciting.
Enticing.
Your ante.
And I think my kind of philosophy when I go out for dinner is I want to order something that I couldn't make at home.
Yes.
And am I going to roast an aubergine for 50 minutes and salt at home? No, I'm not. So yes, yeah. I would order something that has got an interesting cooking technique or a combination of spices that I wouldn't think of, yeah, or that I couldn't do at home. And I think that absolutely ticks the box. Colette, as I said, yours is long gone.
Yeah, mine's long gone. But I also think, just, you know, on that is that, you know, chefs are, I suppose, responsible in many ways of evolving how we eat. And, you know, it starts in the kitchen. It starts in amazing restaurants that you can then drip down to us. Today, we might not be salting an aubergine, but hopefully
maybe one day.
In a couple of years' time, you know, that will come mainstream and then you'll develop and create something even better.
Well,
even
if you're not salting the aubergine, you're starting to look at the aubergine when you're shopping.
You know, exactly.
So you're thinking, oh, actually, I've never been able to cook that. And they actually think, oh, no, I had that. Amazing.
And I cooked it, and they cooked it with this, so I'll buy some feta and, you know, or maybe barley. And exactly, it's about a bit of education of flavour combinations.
Yeah. And barley, I think, it's such a forgotten grain. I love barley. That reminds me of growing up in soups, in stews.
But people are just scared of it. So as soon as they start eating things.
Bring back the barley. We are going to reveal our mystery ingredient when we come back. We'll also be trying Magnolia's Royal Cupcakes and hearing Chef Alexi's food fantasy. Stay with us. Colette Shannon is here, Chef Alexi and Lindsay Battles. There is some sprinkles on top. My 3-year-old added those.
They're perfect.
Obviously. Yeah. And that was just my only feedback. Thank you. My only feedback to Magnolia would be, I feel like the sprinkles are symbolic of the confetti that will be at the royal wedding. So if they want to take my 3-year-old daughter's input, I would absolutely take a cut of the sales. What do we think, guys? It's very sweet, obviously. The lemon, I think, is much needed.
Yeah, definitely. I think you need something to cut through that sweetness. In terms of the elderflower, because I don't know the background to this, is this Harry's and Meghan's choice in terms of elderflower?
It's their choice. That's what their wedding cake's going to be.
Because I'm obviously taking inspiration from this, because I have a challenge on the 19th of May to prepare a cake at a lunch with some friends. We all have to bring a cake representative of.
And I'm going to this lunch, and I did not know this. So I might just be going to Magnolia and buying some cupcakes.
I would be thinking down the lines of the ginger and stuff like
ginger.
That.
Ginger?
That's really awful. So bad. But, you know. But I like the lemon.
I think
the
lemon's
really good. I think it's too sweet.
Elderflower is just a really hard flavour to put into any food because it's so delicate, isn't it?
So to taste it, you need to have a bit of a...
Yeah, to really get... And so sometimes it can end up just not tasting the freshness that you get from if you have an elderflower drink or something. It just doesn't really transfer very well into cakes. I've tried to do them before, and I think you can often get it into... I mean, this is... It's a really good idea, and like, it works really well, and you definitely can deliver it, but it's just a really hard flavour to put into cake.
Not one for bigger bit. And also, Colette, you've brought some camel milk chocolate from Spinners.
I did brought it in for you. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, love.
Well, it was kind of part of. I'm kind of thinking Ramadan obviously is coming soon, and these are kind of local heroes that we're working with. So. A lot of the stuff I brought in today is produced locally, and obviously camel milk chocolate is produced locally.
Absolutely.
And we're
this
bringing
is
camel milk ice cream.
Ooh,
coming
yeah,
I can't
soon,
wait.
Very soon.
I think camel's milk is amazing. That's the only thing we have in our house.
Is it really?
Yeah, we don't have anything else.
So this is the cocoa with macadamia and orange by Al Nasma.
Yeah, so a local company, and they're really nice, and I think it's really important to kind of support local initiatives, even if the ingredients are imported. I think adding the value here is really important.
Yeah. Now, Chef Alexi, you've obviously cooked for us this afternoon, but we can't let you leave without hearing this.
Food fantasy.
Come on, fess up, keep it clean. What's your
keep
food fantasy?
I would say the fantasy, I would like to go bamboo for a year. For 12 months now, bamboo and the saying of you don't work in a kitchen, you just go and eat. And I would really love to do all the seaside towns in Japan, just and work with fishermen, eat fish, see how marine nature is handled and what is sustainable, what is not sustainable, because that's a big thing to me. And I probably will do that in the near future, but. That's definitely a fantasy for now.
So you call it, so you go bamboo, is that what I've never heard this before.
My God, I love that.
If there's a lot of, even like travel shows, if you see like you go to Thailand or Bali and you see, oh, there's a Western person, and he's been like, oh, I've been here 18 years. They've gone bamboo. that's what they call bamboo.
Gone native.
Yeah, sort of thing, you go native and you go bamboo.
So you want to go and meet some Japanese fishermen, hang out with them. Yes.
That is a fantastic fantasy. That is.
Yeah. Eat what they're eating, fish what they're fishing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds epic. And then obviously bring it all back to Dubai and feed us.
Yes.
Yay. Okay.
Take
we'll support you.
For this. Definitely.
We'll support you in your fantasy in that case. Now, Colette and Lindsay, you were keeper of the clues this afternoon. This was to win a 500 dirham voucher to eat some of Chef Alexi's food at the newly made over Brunswick Eatery Bar and Terrace. Colette, what was today's mystery ingredient?
Well, I thought you were going to ask me who was the winner. I was going to say me.
No.
Walnuts.
Walnuts. We had so many guesses. Thank you so much for getting in touch with us on the show this afternoon. Catherine, you are our winner. It's phone number ending 4376. We will be in touch about getting that voucher to you. You can go along and meet Chef Alexi and his well-fed, happy team for a good feed. So what should she order, Chef Alexi? What's your big pick?
Everything. Everything. I would say a lot of the fish and also a lot of the cured meats.
I have to say, that Wagyu sounds pretty incredible.
Yes. Yeah.
If I were Catherine, I'd go on my own.
Yes.
Max it out.
Absolutely. 500 dirhams, dinner for one, Brunswick. That is a happy time.
Perfect
indeed.
Night. Perfect night. Really.
Chef Alexi, thank you so much for bringing in your food, sharing your food fantasy and all of your views. All the very best at the new Brunswick. We're definitely going to come along and say hi, give you a wave in the kitchen.
Please
and have a fantastic weekend. All the best with the launch.
Thank you.
Colette Shannon, thank you for bringing in sweet treats, the Ramadan tartlets. We obviously want to hear what's going on during Ramadan at Spinney, so we'll have you on soon, I hope. And Lindsay, thank you
Thanks
for sharing
for
all
me.
Of your inspirations. I'm definitely going to try and make some of that bread this weekend, or I might just send you a little message and get you to bring some over.
Okay,
perfect.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.